Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here Thursday, August the 26th. 2021, 16 minutes past the hour. Do want to remind everybody that when this show goes off today, we'll have Glenn Coble on from 10:10 a.m. until 12 noon. And then from 12:10 p.m. till 1 p.m. today, we have Swap Shop with Glenn Coble, and you will not want to miss that on this station for love nor money. Glenn does a great job with that show, and hopefully there are a lot of items people would like to swap. Now remember to let people know if they're not aware of Swap Shop, because we have got a lot of calls about this, that it airs every Thursday here on the station from 12:10 until 1 p.m. Also today, the Adam the Computer Guy show comes up on this station from 2:10 until 3 p.m. 2:10 until 3 p.m. today. It is the Adam the Computer Guy show, so don't miss that. Now, we're going to have a guest joining us here momentarily, which I look forward to, but the information from Dr. Gingrich was certainly eye-opening, and I guess we can take everything as it is, with a grain of salt, however you want to say it, but that's the best information we have at this particular point, so we will deal with that and kind of go from there. It's an interesting time. The models that we are seeing are kind of fascinating, that this August is much worse than last August, about four times as worse with patient diagnosis when it comes to COVID-19. I don't think we had any days last August that were above 1,500, 1,600. There might have been a few, but most of them were below 1,000, which was good. Yesterday, we had a 4,600 day, and prior to that, the days were rather large as well. So it's interesting, and I guess people will do what they do. I do want to remind everybody that, and this is an announcement we got just recently, that Marion Public Health will be closing at 12 p.m. on Friday, September 10th in order to offer a COVID-19 vaccine clinic from 1 to 7 p.m. There will also be a COVID-19 vaccination clinic on Saturday, September 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Both clinics will be held at the Health Department located at 181 South Main Street. The Pfizer vaccine will be available, and a $100 prepaid gift card will be available for all Marion County residents who receive their first dose of the vaccine on one of these two dates only. Anyone ages 12 to 17 years of age must be accompanied by a parent or guardian, and ID is required. The clinics will be available to walk-ins, or you can schedule an appointment by calling the health department at 740-387-6520. Now, for the safety of our patients as well as our staff, Marion Public Health is implementing a mask requirement for anyone coming into the building. Disposable masks will be available, or you can bring your own. All health department employees will be wearing masks. Marion Public Health is also offering back-to-school shots by appointment only by calling 740-387-6520. So you've got to remember that. The number, 740 877-687-6520. You can schedule an appointment if you're busy on those 2 days. That way you can get in and out. Or if you need your back-to-school shots, you can also call that number and get those. And a $100 prepaid gift card will be given to anybody who shows up on September 10th or September 11th for their first COVID-19 vaccination. So that is where we are at this particular point. 21 minutes past the hour on this Thursday, August the 26th, 2021. Things just keep getting more fascinating as time goes on. Also, don't forget the Dinner with the Presidents coming up on Saturday, November the 6th, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Right now, it's $35 for general seating, $20 for general seating for a child 5 to 12 years old. George Washington will be speaking, Martin Van Buren, Warren G. Harding, John F. Kennedy. Non-speaking presidents, James Madison, U.S. Grant, Chester Arthur, Benjamin Harrison, Theodore Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, Barbara Bush. And the master of ceremonies will be James Cox, and a special guest speaker will be Mary Ellen Withrow. If you have any want any information on this, reservations, by the way, need to be made by October 21st. Call 740-387-4255. You know, I need to be a speaker at this particular event. Wouldn't that be a lot of fun? I could get up there and tell you of my contributions with or to the presidents, President Harding, who I know very well, and of course Mary Ellen Withrow, who I know very well. Be right up there with the presidents. That's a fun event. I only was able to go once. I don't know if I'll be going this year or not. You know, I maybe I could just walk in and put a chair up to Mary Ellen's table, and we could sit and have a nice conversation. I don't think that's how it works, but it's a fun event. And what I like best about that event, to be honest, is the food. I like that the food is a food that was something that the presidents like. And I was talking to Fred Malone earlier. I don't remember if we talked on the air or off the air about this, but with Mary Ellen being one of the table leaders and one of the guest speakers, it would be interesting to have a food that she likes quite a bit. You know, these gumdrop bars were very good, and last week we saw the Withrow waffles. That might be a nice dessert for people that night. And I'm trying to think of what the it's goose liver. But it's a good dip for crackers. So, I don't know. I think that would be interesting as well to go along with the other president's foods. I don't know what President Harding's favorite food was. I don't know what his food will be that night. You know, I look at this list. George Washington. Now, what in the world was George Washington eating? Apples? Maybe apple pie? Martin Van Buren, I have no idea. Warren G. Harding, I don't know. I don't know what Warren... I should call up Warren Harding sometime and ask him what his favorite food was. And John Kennedy. Now, John Kennedy was from the Massachusetts area, so maybe he liked crab or something like that, something from the ocean. You never know. Here we are. Well, maybe our guest will call in this hour. It's hard to tell. Maybe we'll hear from him. Maybe we won't. But it certainly will be an interesting conversation if we're able to make it happen here. And again, we thank Dr. Gingrich for calling in this morning. 740-383-9944. If anybody out there in our listening audience has anything to say, you can give us a buzz here. We'll be glad to talk to you. Oh, here we go. I just got a message from our friend James Anderson, who I believe is on with Glenn Coble this morning, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, that Paw Paw Pudding was George Washington's favorite dessert. Now, I had a Paw Paw once, thanks to James Anderson. Now, I wonder what goes into Paw Paw Pudding. Maybe just like a tapioca concoction with pawpaws in it? Or maybe you just whip the pawpaws up to a point to where it's pawpaw pudding. It sounds good. The pawpaw I ate was very good, and that's P-A-W-P-A-W. A lot of people got that wrong when I first brought that up. But again, phone lines are open here, 740-383-9944. We can discuss anything on your mind at this particular point. And heaven knows there's a lot on people's mind at this particular point. Maybe I should make sure the phones are working with our guest, who we have not heard from as of yet, but we'll hold out hope that we will get them on before the hour's up here. Because it'd be a very interesting conversation, to be honest with you. Let's see if maybe we can get a hold of them. I know I got an email from them earlier on today. So let's see here. Let's give this a try and see if we can get a hold of anybody that we're trying to get a hold of here. Live radio, as it would be. A lot of interesting things going on in the world right now. Well, let's see here. We're going to try to get the operator. Maybe this will work out. Or maybe the operator's not in yet. Wouldn't that be a thing if we couldn't even get a hold of the operator? But we're working on it. Trying to make it happen here this morning. As I say, live radio, always. Hello? Well, I don't know what happened to the live operator there. Maybe we'll hear back in a moment. They sounded a little worried. I think I was in the middle of saying live radio when they picked up the telephone. But now maybe they'll pass along the message and we'll get the person on the air momentarily here, so we can move right along. I was trying to think if anything interesting happened last night. All right. I think that might have spurred the call here. All right. And as we continue on this morning here on WWGH Radio, 28 minutes past the hour, we're joined by a gentleman who I've been looking forward to talking to. He's a voting rights activist, Time Magazine most influential person, and there is a March on Washington scheduled, and he will be one of the speaker. He is the president of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, which led the effort to pass Amendment 4 and restore voting rights to over 1.4 million Floridians with past felony convictions. This is the largest expansion of voting rights in America in a half century, abolishing a 150-year-old Jim Crow era law. He is a formerly homeless returning citizen who overcame many obstacles to eventually become the president of this organization. And again, 2019, he was named as one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time Magazine. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones Desmond Mead. Mr. Mead, how are you?
I'm fine, Scott. How are you doing this morning?
Good to talk with you. Now, you're in Washington currently getting ready for the big march.
Yes. This is, for me, it's definitely a historic moment. I've never participated in a march before in Washington, D.C. And then, you know, just looking back at the history of the marches, especially when Martin Luther King delivered his I Have a Dream speech, and just thinking about the festivities and the impact of that march, to be a part of the activities this upcoming weekend is very historic to me and extremely meaningful.
Desmond, tell us about your past. Tell us how this all came about with you.
Yes, so I am what we call a returning citizen. I know that term is used in the D.C. area quite frequently. A person who have previously been convicted of a felony offense. And, you know, back many years ago, you know, I battled a substance abuse issue. And it caused me to, you know, be in and out of jail. It caused me a lot of heartache. And eventually I ended up in being sentenced to prison for about 15 years in 2001. Eventually I was able to get my sentence overturned, but, you know, I still had a substance abuse addiction. And in August of 2005, I found myself standing in front of railroad tracks waiting on the train to come so I can jump in front of it. The train didn't come that day, and I ended up crossing those tracks and checking myself into drug treatment, and after completing that, moving into a homeless shelter. While there, I decided to go back to school because I wanted to do something to improve my life and to stop the cycle of drug addiction. And one thing led to another, and, you know, I did real well in school, and eventually I was able to get my law degree in 2014. And during that time, I became the president of the Florida Rights Restoration Corps.
Mm. Now, when you were standing on the tracks, what led you to that point? I mean, a lot of people wonder how people, they ask this question all the time after somebody commits suicide. What led them to that point?
Well, let me tell you, like I said, I was battling addiction, and I remember the night before, or the day before, I remember calling a friend of mine to try to get some money so I could use drugs. And I didn't have but, you know, maybe a little bit of change in my pocket. And he recommended that I go to a church to have a particular pastor pray for me, right? And, you know, I was brought up in a Christian family, and so I thought that this was that moment that I was going to be rescued from drug addiction. And I remember spending the last bit of change to catch a bus halfway there and then walk the rest of the way to this church, and I sat through the service, and at the end, I approached the pastor, and I asked her for prayer, told her I didn't want any money, I didn't want any clothes, all I wanted was prayer. And I remember when she put her hands on my shoulder and pointed at another person and said to go to that person to make an appointment for the following day. And I remember thinking in my head, I was like, woman, don't you understand how desperate I am? And all I'm asking for is prayer, and you're telling me I have to wait till tomorrow to get the prayer. And I remember walking out of that church thinking that even God has turned his back on me. And that night, I slept on the bus bench out in the open. You know, in the past, I've slept behind Dipsy dumpsters or in abandoned buildings. I never slept in public so that anyone could see me in that predicament. But that night, I slept on a bus bench right in front of a major doorway, and I didn't care who saw me. I was at my lowest. And the following morning when I woke up and I was walking, and as I approached some tracks, I started thinking about a gentleman who maybe about 2-3 weeks earlier had committed suicide by train, and I was just fixated on just that idea.
And what stopped you?
Well, nothing stopped me. The train didn't come.
It just never came.
You know, the train didn't come. Let me tell you, I'm scared of needles, right? And I don't like pain. But even with God, you know, because as I was thinking, you know, I stood there thinking about how much pain I was going to feel when that train ran over my body, whether I was going to die instantly or I had to go to the moment to back and I have pain.
Desmond, we're having a little trouble hearing you.
Yep. I said even the thought of the pain did not make me budge, you know, and so I stood there waiting and waiting, but, you know, thankfully what happened was the train never came, and eventually I crossed those tracks.
So at this point, if a train had come, you would not be here talking to us?
More likely, no, I probably wouldn't have been here. Maybe 1.4 million people in Florida would not have had a pathway to have their voting rights. Hey, who knows?
When you think about that moment, how do you describe it? Was it divine intervention? Is it luck? What is it?
I'll say it was divine intervention, you know, because so many things in my life have really pointed to the fact that there was a calling there, you know, and, you know, when I look back at my life now and think about all of the things that I've gone through, you know, it's no longer with disappointment, it's no longer with despair, it's actually with pride, because I'm a person of faith, and I believe that God took me through a lot of those things to prepare me to be of greater service to Him, right? I can tell you that, you know, matter of fact, when I graduated, right before I graduated law school, one of the last classes I took was me actually preparing for a mock trial and actually participating in it. And in the middle of the mock trial, where we were actually conducting a trial in an actual courtroom in front of a real judge, and it dawned on me that I was actually in the same courtroom that I was sentenced years earlier to 15 years when I thought my life was over. And so to be in the same courtroom that I thought my life was over, to be in that room as a soon-to-be law school graduate, right, performing a mock trial, you know, that was like a major sign to me that there was a calling on the work that I was doing.
You know, Desmond, there's a lot of conversation in this country right now about voting rights. You're down in Florida, in Washington today. What's going on? Has this been a continual thing in this country, or is something going on right now?
You know, I think this is something that has been continued for quite some time, you know. The issue we're dealing with now, as it relates to felon disenfranchisement, you know, we know that this issue has, so much history behind it. You know, we've seen during the Reconstruction era when felon disenfranchisement seen its reemergence particularly in the South, and it was specifically used to diminish the newfound political capital that newly freed slaves were granted. Well, through the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, we've seen that not only were the slaves freed, but they started exercising their newfound right and started becoming elected officials. And we've seen that a lot of legislators in the South deliberately employed these Jim Crow tactics, you know, whether it was felon disenfranchisement, whether it was poll taxes, literacy tests, and outright state-sanctioned terror that was brought down on the newly free slaves. It was a process of trying to regulate who gets to make decisions, who gets to determine the future of their community, of their state, of the country. And so this is something I think that's been going on for quite some time. And we've seen the side switch, you know, and we have to be honest, you know, during Reconstruction era, during the Civil Rights era, it was Democrats that was a dead set against African-Americans participating in elections and having a say. And so we're seeing a switch in the parties and the attempts to minimize the impact of voting by the population. At the end of the day, no matter how you look at it, it is an all-out assault against democracy.
You know, Desmond, what is the reason that convicted felons are not allowed to regain their voting rights when they are released from prison? What's the theory behind that?
You know, I don't know if you can really call it a theory, but rather a strategy behind it. You know, as it relates to committing a crime and not being able to vote, it is directly related to the attempt to minimize the impact of newly freed slaves. That's where it began. It wasn't designed for white folks. It wasn't designed for Hispanic folks. It was designed specifically for the newly freed slaves. And so, as an example, you know, in some states, that you would lose the right to vote for hitting your wife, but not for killing your wife, right? Because these laws were designed to be attached to offenses that the newly freed slaves were more likely to commit than anybody else, right? And so it was a deliberate attempt to minimize a specific demographic. But like I tell folks, just like a tumor that's left unchecked, it can spread throughout your body. And so today, not only the felon disenfranchisement impacts the African-American community, it also impacts the white community, Latino community. It impacts all of America because, you know, number one, it's been left unchecked, but number two, you know, our criminal justice system has been so broken and out of tune that we have become a country that incarcerates more of its citizens than basically any other country in the world.
You know, Desmond, I have a question for you, because here in Ohio, there's been a question of this. So we have a governor's race coming up next year, and I was just talking to the mayor the other day, and you cannot run for public office, in Ohio at least, in on the local level or the state level, if you are a convicted felon, even though you've been released from prison. Do you have any idea what that's all about?
I think it goes right back to how can we prevent American citizens from participating in the democratic process, from having a say in how their communities are ran. You know, at the end of the day, you know, what I tell folks is I have four sons and a daughter. And, you know, my sons, especially with four sons growing up, they've done some boneheaded things. But no matter what they've done, they never stop being my sons. Right? None of them ever stop being my son. They might do something stupid. They might get punished, but they never stop being me. That is the same way we should approach citizenship. And there's nothing that speaks more to citizenship than being able to vote, being able to participate in the democratic process, being able to run for office, being able to serve on a jury. And when someone makes a mistake, they should not stop being an American citizen. But that's what happens when we have these places that implement felon disenfranchisement laws, because people are basically stripped of their citizenship, and we can't do things that even immigrants can do.
Could they stop? I mean, are these laws to the degree that if you tried to run for office, that if you went and got a petition, that they could stop you from running for office, that if you went and voted, they could throw it out?
Most definitely. I mean, you have to understand that, and that's why, you know, the work that's going on right now in D.C. Is so important, because there is a distinction between state rights and federal rights. And the states have the power to determine how they're going to run their elections. And there's some limited control that the federal government have over it. But, you know, what you see is cornucopia different policies throughout each of the states that just have different standards. And to be able to have one clear standard that's applied evenly throughout the entire state is more desirable, because it shouldn't be a case where a person in Ohio is limited from doing things that a person in a similar situated person in Virginia or in California or in New York can do.
What is the hope, purpose of the march that will happen in Washington?
Well, you know, I guess you may get a different answer from different folks, but when I look at the march, you know, I think some of the things that that we seek to accomplish is, number one, to raise awareness. Number two, I think to put pressure on our elected officials to actually do the right thing and pass this legislation and make sure that, you know, every American citizen have access to democracy, equal access to democracy that's not encumbered through fines and fees or legal financial obligations and ID requirements that are outrageous. You know, that folks' access to the ballot box should be as easy as possible for American citizens. And it should be encouraged by our government. So I think that is probably the biggest thing that we hope to accomplish. I know that I hope to accomplish, in addition to raising awareness, because this legislation, unfortunately, does not adequately address the issues faced by people with felony convictions in this country. And, you know, that is I would say, oversight. And we think that we need to raise awareness about that, because guess what? You know, there are millions upon millions of returning citizens throughout this country, and we're somebody's sons and daughters and fathers and mothers. We're citizens just like everybody else, and we need to be afforded the same protections and the same access.
How did you gain voting rights for 1.4 million Floridians who had felony convictions?
Through love. We did it through love. You know, voting rights can be a very divisive subject. We see it right now, you know. And then when you add the ingredient of a person having a previous felony conviction, that makes it even more complicated and even more divisive. And, you know, our efforts in Florida should not have been successful, you know, according to the experts. It was like mixing oil and water. But we were very successful because we approached this through love, that we approached it in a manner that did not seek to divide the country, did not seek to sow hatred or fear, but rather we organized around love. And we connected people along the lines of humanity and brought people from all walks of life and all political persuasions together to stand in solidarity for second chances. And so November 2018, we had over 5.1 million people in Florida. Over, I think, 65% of the voters that voted yes, and over a million of them were Republicans. And, you know, we had people from all from the entire spectrum that stood up and supported it, and we did it with love.
How have things like being in prison and being homeless impacted your life?
Well, I tell you, number one, I could say it prepared me for moments like this. It really gave me a much deeper and up-close personal understanding of some of the things that so many Americans face. You know, there's an adage that says that those that are closest to the pain are the ones that are often closest to the solution. And there's another one that I always use a lot as well, that a chain, like they say, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. I believe that that also applies to our society. If we want to become a great community, a great state, a great nation, then it is incumbent upon us to empower those that have been marginalized the most, those that have been pushed to the fringes of our societies, right? And there's no other group of people that represents that class more than people who've been convicted of felony offenses. You know, we have our kids, and then we also have our elderly. And if we can empower those three groups, particularly returning citizens, then that would make our communities, our state, our country, much stronger. And so we are, you know, I do believe that you know, like I said, I'm a person of faith. I believe that God uses the weakest or the most despised to bring about the biggest change. I've seen it so many times in the Bible, in the Quran, in the Torah, you know, and I believe that this is what we're going to be experiencing in this country. It's going to be the people who've been marginalized, who've had convictions, who've been arrested or locked up, who've had substance abuse issues, who've been homeless, that's going to make that change. And having someone like me that went through it just makes it more easier for me to understand that concept and to be able to push advocacy around people who have been marginalized for so long and work to empower them.
You know, Desmond, a lot of people would feel that race is the defining issue of our time, and a lot of people today would say there is no racism, that we've cured that problem, that it's no longer applicable to anything in society. What would you say to those people?
I would say that they would need to show me some proof of that, because I don't see it, you know. Racism is alive and well. It's always been alive and well. I remember when President Obama first was elected, folks were saying, okay, this shows that we have taken it to another level now and the racism no longer exists. And I think that what we've seen over the last few years is, you know, really telling that not only is, does racism still exist, it seems like it's firmly entrenched in our societies. And the, I think at the end of the day, the people that are saying that are people that are doing their best to avoid having those discussions. But I also think that the people who do believe that racism exists have to dig down even deeper. I think that there's some moments where we're missing having that conversation to really address the issue of racism in our country. And until we properly address it, you know, we're going to have problems with it. The other thing that I think is so important is that one thing I learned in recovery, in alcoholic drug recovery, is that if you've been using drugs, say, for 20 years, right, and all of a sudden you stop using drugs, just because you've been clean for, you know, a couple of months, that don't mean that you're out the woods. You know, a lot of sponsors would tell you that, listen, if you've been using drugs for 10, 15 years, you need to be clean for about 10, 15 years before you can think that you're out of the woods yet. Well, racism has been a part of the fabric of this country for quite some time. And I want to say for hundreds and hundreds of years. And when we look back at the advances that we've made, it's only been just a snapshot, you know. We're nowhere near even getting to 20% of the time that this country has seen racism, you know. And so it's going to take a while. It's not anything that's going to happen overnight, you know. We're not going to have these kumbaya moments, you know, in another year or two. I think it's going to take several years for the country to wean itself off of the racist, I would say, foundation that has been here for quite some time.
What was it like to be named to Time Magazine's Most Influential People list?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, I was shocked when I first heard it, and I kind of minimized it. I remember I was with my wife in the car when I found out, and I was like, are they saying that I'm one of the 100 most influential in the country? And I remember my wife saying, no, baby, they said the world. And my only response to her was that there are more than 100 countries in the world, right? And so it was very overwhelming. But, you know, I remember when we eventually went to the gala, when it dawned on me, I think that issue, they had Dwayne The Rock Johnson on the cover. And I remember telling the executives at Time Magazine, I think that they dropped the ball on that issue. They should have had me on the cover. And it wasn't because, you know, of any conceit or anything, but what I thought was that was a moment. And that's what I'm proudest of, for that recognition, because that was a moment to where anyone, if I was on the cover, anyone looking at that cover, right, they would know that you don't have to be a movie star. You don't have to be a billionaire. You don't have to be an elected official to have an impact in your community, in your state, in the country, or even the world, right? That if that person, Desmond, who was a drug addict, who was homeless, who was in prison before, if he could turn his life around and become one of the 100 most influential people in the world, then that means that anybody could do that, right? No matter where you, what your station is in life, no matter how little money you have or whatever, that everyone has an opportunity to be great and be influential. And the key to that is being willing to serve, being willing to let your actions be driven by love instead of hate.
What do you think got you on that list? What makes you influential?
Well, leading the effort to restore voting rights to 1.4 million Floridians. You know, like I said, that was a very monumental feat that we were able to accomplish. Because at the end of the day, there wasn't anyone who believed that that could have been possible in Florida. You know, I tell folks, if my mother was alive at the time, she would be doubting it too, but we were able to do something that was seemingly impossible. And the beautiful part about it was that we were able to do it by bringing people together, and we were able to actually have a significant impact in expanding democracy. And I think that that was huge, you know, being able to organize people from all walks of life to actually move a major, what we consider a human rights issue, as far as with letting people be able to vote after they've served their time. You know, to be able to do that, I think, was significant. And that was probably the driving force. It was definitely the driving force.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years? What do you want to accomplish, and where do you want to be a decade from now?
In 10 years, man, I want to be on somebody's beach in a hammock, just with a huge smile on my face, knowing that we have a democracy that everyone, I mean, I do mean everyone, has the opportunity to participate. You know, that we have a democracy to where people are wanting to go and vote as opposed to feeling like they have to go vote, right? I think that, you know, 10 years from now we can have that, and I could relax in some tropical island and write another book. That's a sequel to Let My People Vote.
How do you accomplish this?
Well, you know, I always, you know, tell folks, you know, probably the same way that you eat an elephant, you know, one bite at a time. You know, we started in Florida, and Florida has, you know, our victory in Florida in 2018 really served as a catalyst to so many other states. You know, we in California, just a year ago, they were able to pass a constitutional amendment that extended voting rights to people even while they were on probation or parole. Just a couple of days ago, one of our colleagues, Dara Atkinson, he led a legal effort in the courts too, and they were successful in winning voting rights for people on parole and probation in North Carolina. You know, we see movements in so many other different states, in Iowa, Kentucky. And so I think that, you know, these movements are gaining even more momentum. And as we are successful in these individual states, I think it would lead up to something more significant on a national level.
Desmond, with just about 2 minutes left to go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, being a Floridian, what is COVID down there right now?
Well, COVID is, yeah, I think the probably the correct question should be, what is the response to COVID like down here in Florida? You know, we have a governor that seems as if he have a hard time letting science guide his actions. It seems like he have a hard time letting what's in the best interest of the people guide his actions. And so we're seeing, as a matter of fact, on a personal level, you know, my son was experiencing some medical complications just 2 nights ago, and he could not even get admitted into the emergency room because all of the beds were filled from people who did not want to take the vaccine but are now have COVID. You know, and then so we had to take him from one hospital to another hospital, clear across town, and even when we got to the other hospital, there was still a significant wait. And so people's lives are being put in harm's way because of a lack of leadership as it relates to the response to the COVID pandemic. That's Florida, you know, and I'm pretty sure it's some other states where, you know, we have a leadership that are guided more by their politics than by their love for the people.
Mm. Desmond Mead, good luck to for everything, with everything going on there in Washington. I'm so glad to have you on the show, and hopefully we'll have you back.
All right, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Desmond Mead, one of the Time Magazine 100 most influential people in the world. How about that? For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Glenn Coble up in 15 minutes.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LPFM, Marion, Ohio, the place for the best guests and talk. From Joey Diori at WGN's Bozo the Clown.
Before we wrap up, I'll ask, and you can or can't, can you do something in the Bozo voice for those people?
You know, the funny thing is, and as I mentioned before, my voice and Bozo's pretty much ended up sounding the same. I'll tell you one quick story. My wife and I were having dinner in a restaurant, and my wife said something